KUOW podcasts are made possible by listener support. Become a new or renewing member today at KUOW.org.
I know exactly who will live in this city. Only the people with the most money. We need to find a way to accommodate everybody.
It already is happening, and I would like the policy to be eliminated to reflect the reality of what's going on the ground right now.
Some of the new music we're going to be talking about, some of the best music of 2012, that's coming up today. Also, you heard from Captain Zoe Bedell suing to have the ban on women in combat dropped. We're going to talk a little more about that with a former infantryman. Excuse me. We start, though, with a look at what's happening in South Lake Union. How many towers will be allowed? How high will they be built in South Lake Union? Higher densities are coming to South Lake Union in Seattle area, along with the big biotech firms and Amazon. The council and the mayor agree on that aspect of the future of the neighborhood. The question is, how high will the towers be? How much of the block will they take up? And how many towers will be built across that whole neighborhood? City Council wants to take a closer look at the latest proposal. One point of contention, the size and heights of the buildings. As Mercer is finished, the open blocks will be built up. The landowner, Vulcan, wants to go up 24 stories with three towers fronting the lake across valley from the park. The council wants to hire a consultant to review the proposal, that proposal in particular. Richard Conlon is a city council member after two terms as council president from 2008 to 2011. He is taking on the chair of the Planning, Land Use, and Sustainability Committee. Richard Conlon, thanks for talking to us again. So, Richard Conlon, I have a question for you. Richard, are you there? Oh, he's listening. Oh, well, they're talking. They're talking right now, aren't they? We'll see if they come to us. No, we'll wait a little bit. You know, one of the things I wanted to ask Richard Conlon, he'll be there. He's going to be there in 10 seconds, is the original proposals that the mayor had talked about when he was running and soon after was we should have a skinny towers along those blocks so that they wouldn't impede too much on the view of the lake for the people behind them, but also because skinny towers have a different impact on the streetscape, something along the lines of what's been built in Vancouver, BC. That idea of the skinny towers seems to have gone by the wayside. Perhaps they couldn't make it work, couldn't make it pencil out, or they couldn't mandate it. That's one of the questions we have. All right, so Richard Conlon, can you hear me?
I can hear you now.
All right, good.
I only heard about the last two sentences.
Oh, well, that didn't matter. Well, I was just blathering. So I introduced us by talking about the densities that are coming to the neighborhood and just where they will be and how high the towers would be if they're allowed. I wanted to ask you about the proposal that the mayor is putting out and what the council thinks of it and what you want to see done. But I wanted to start by asking, what happened to the idea for the skinny towers that some people had talked about early on along South Lake Union, in particular, along Mercer and Valley there, something along the lines of what's been built in Vancouver. Is that economically or even politically feasible in our area?
Well, I guess skinny is kind of a relative term. But the point is, by having these towers defined as only one per block, a limited number of towers, and relatively small in their footprint, I think you actually get a pretty similar kind of experience that you would get in some things like the Vancouver waterfront.
Didn't I see that some people thought that the proposals that had been laid out for those towers were not skinny but fairly squat on top of what did somebody call them, bread boxes?
Well, you know, people can call things whatever they want. It's only 1/6 of the total block, and that's pretty skinny to me.
How high should those towers be?
You know, that's something we'll have to determine. Personally, I don't think that we should be afraid of heights. Heights are something that can give us the kind of density we're looking for with the right kind of urban form. I think you can come up with something that is a nice tower that looks good and that actually works very well from the standpoint of the rest of the city. So we'll have to evaluate what heights look most relevant to us. But one of the important points is that, of course, as you get closer to the water, the land slopes down. So higher heights closer to the water actually makes more sense in some ways and provides less view blockage, for example, than higher heights up on the upland where they stand out more.
What is your opinion of the Vulcan proposal to go up 24 stories along the waterfront?
I'm pretty excited about the idea. Again, we're going to have to take a look at the details and see how this actually fits. But to me, this is exactly the kind of urban density that we should be having. I think it really makes sense for the investments that we put into South Lake Union to make sure that we really put the kind of growth into South Lake Union that those investments are intended to support. I mean, there's a couple important points about this. South Lake Union is a designated urban center. It is where we intend to put a large amount of housing in the future. And if that housing is not put in designated urban centers like South Lake Union, then that means it has to be spread around the rest of the city. And so one of the questions that you have to ask is, okay, you can look at particular heights and particular zoning ideas in one place or another place, but the overall amount of housing that we want to put in South Lake Union is very important for our long-range achievement of the Growth Management Act.
What about behind those towers as we go up towards Denny? Should they also be 40 stories, for example, just south of Denny?
Well, just north of Denny, that zoning is compatible with it, and so the question is whether Denny is the right boundary line or whether there are other considerations that we want to think about. One question that I'm going to be looking at is, what is the shading impact on Denny Park, and is that an issue that we need to be concerned about? So we're going to review all those kinds of issues before making any specific determination about how high is the right height. But the important point, I think, is to say that the overall structure is something that is a really important part of our management, growth management strategy, and the overall pattern of density makes a whole lot of sense.
Mayor McGinn and the city in general are talking about 22,000 new jobs, lots of millions in new revenue as the densities go in and the heights go up, 12,000 new housing units, 400 units of affordable housing, which started about 1,300 a month. How is that number, which is fairly small compared to 12,000 new housing units overall, how is that number maintaining affordable housing in the city?
Well, we're going to be reviewing the entire affordable housing framework and coming up with the recommendations as to how we actually make that work. But the important point about affordable housing is that we build low-income housing primarily through our low-income housing levy, tax credit programs, other kinds of ways in which we meet the needs of low-income residents. New construction that is not specifically subsidized will almost never provide, in fact, I can't imagine when it's going to provide income that, or housing that's going to be affordable for people at the lowest levels of income. What we're really looking for is workforce housing, housing that can actually meet the needs of people who are going to be working in that area, working downtown, have the opportunity to walk or bicycle or take transit to work so they don't have the transportation costs, which is one of the important things that may make it affordable. If you just look at their housing and don't include transportation costs, you get a totally different picture of what affordability is going to be like. So that's an important point about it. Having said that, we do have requirements that part of what the happens as a result of rezoning is that money has to be contributed to make sure that we do get some of those funds for low-income housing. And we're going to make sure that that is done appropriately and done well.
In the neighborhood?
In the neighborhood as much as possible, but certainly our current provisions provide that it has to be within a reasonable distance from the area where the density takes place.
What's reasonable?
I don't remember the exact details on it, but it's certainly it's in the immediate area.
What do you think of Vulcan's proposal to swap some land in order to get the additional heights, and then the city would have to pay some millions of dollars to build on that block. City would come to own a whole block.
Well, we do have funding for low-income housing, and one of the important points about being able to build low-income housing is, of course, having land on which you can build it. Land is very expensive in that neighborhood, and so that donation of land is extremely valuable. Again, we're going to have to review the details of this proposal. It's clear that it's a pretty extraordinary public benefit for us to be receiving. The question is it enough for us to be able to say, okay, this is the right kind of agreement?
Well, you saw the argument people said 11 years ago, the city sold that property for $3 million, and now they would have to buy it back for 10 to 12. You hear the argument that says land values have gone up, but they've gone up in part because the city has already changed ordinances and allowed for the density and development down there. Is that a good deal?
Well, again, you know, that's the sort of thing that we're going to have to look at the numbers and crunch them and make sure that we get exactly the right deal. This is something that has been developed. by the mayor in negotiations with Vulcan. The council is now entering our review process, and we're going to look at those numbers and make sure that what we get is full value for the public.
You support the idea of hiring a consultant to review that rezone?
We actually have two consultants who have been hired by the council to provide additional input. One of them is the review of the Block 59 agreement and validating the numbers. The second is looking at how are we doing in terms of affordable housing and are we capturing the maximum amount of value that would we be allowed to by law in order to be able to do that. It's important to note that there are restrictions in terms of what we can do legally in order to get public benefits, and we have to be sure to balance those restrictions, the legal requirements that we have, with trying to negotiate the best maximum deal that we can get.
But you find the proposal interesting enough, you don't find it pretty expensive for a use of our limited housing levy dollars to build down there on that block if the transfer is made?
I think it's definitely makes sense to provide people with low-income housing that, again, is close to downtown. People have low transportation costs. They have the opportunities to get employment in places where they can have easy access to it. So it's intriguing. Crunching the numbers and coming up with exactly the right agreement, that we need to make sure we do. But the fact is that the idea of providing that kind of low-income benefits near downtown is very, very compelling.
You mentioned Denny Park. Is the land that's across from Denny, which is now owned by Vulcan, going to be incorporated as a public park, or is that going to be developed on?
I don't know what the plans are for that. It's one that I haven't had any personal conversations about, so that's something we'll have to take a look at.
You're building up a lot. You're not getting all the amenities you'd hoped for back in the days when you had thought there was going to be a big Central Park down there.
Well, I was a really strong supporter of the Commons proposal, and I thought that was a great concept. One of the things that was important about the Commons proposal was that it intended to have the areas immediately around the Commons built up significantly high. They were talking about 20,000 or so residences around the Commons in order to provide the kind of density that really makes a park work. So while we have a different configuration now, we didn't get the Commons, we have a great South Lake Union Park, and we've got the opportunity to really make sure that we do realize a number of the benefits that we were looking for in the Commons, even if we can't get that terrific park that we talked about. And one of the great things is we are going to have a similar kind of great, wonderful park downtown with the reconstruction of the waterfront. So, times change. You don't always get exactly what you want, but you have the opportunity to try and reach the goals that you were aiming for.
All right, Richard Conlon is a Seattle City Council member. Thank you, sir.
Thank you very much.
You're listening to Weekday on KUOW. We're talking about the rezone of South Lake Union Park. Coming up, we're going to talk about women in combat.
Parents could routinely determine their child's entire genetic blueprint at birth, but do they want to?
Do we wait until she's a specific age and say, oh, by the way, we have all of your DNA, do you want to see what doctors have found, or do we keep that to ourselves?
The dilemmas of genome sequencing for newborns, later on All Things Considered from NPR News.
That story and much more today from 3 until 6:30. This is 94.9 KUOW Seattle, news and information. It's 9:19. I'm Andy Hurst.
Support for KUOW comes from the Seattle Symphony, presenting Don Tiki's Hot Lava Holiday Show on Monday, December 17th at Benaroya Hall. Tickets online at seattlesymphony.org.
Clouds and rain, 49 degrees in the University District. Working towards a high of 50 today. We're expecting clouds and showers the rest of today, tonight, and tomorrow. Tonight's low in the mid-40s. Tomorrow's high in the low 50s.
Last week, Marine Captain Zoe Bedell joined other members of the military and the ACLU in filing a federal lawsuit challenging the exclusion of combat roles for women serving in the military. We talked with her last Friday, and that prompted Jeff Baylor to write us. Jeff served in the war zone as an infantryman from 1988 to 1992. Thanks for talking to us.
Oh, no problem. Thanks for having me.
So here's a couple of things that we heard from Zoe Bedell. Opponents say that women aren't strong enough for combat roles. And asking the question, if a male soldier died in battle, would a woman be able to carry his body back to base? I asked Captain Bedell about that strength issue.
Strength is definitely an important aspect on the battlefield, but there are multiple characteristics that you would want of a combat leader or just a combat soldier. Ability to make quick decisions in high-pressure situations, ability to shoot straight. And I certainly would want everyone who's serving in those situations to be able to meet all of those requirements and be able to meet all of those standards. And right now, women don't even have a chance to compete to meet those standards. So that's what we're asking for. I'm certainly not asking anyone to lower standards, but I want there to be reasonable standards and that women be allowed to try to meet them.
So you served in the war zone. You served with women. What about that argument?
Well, I think it's a valid argument that that women should be able to serve in combat roles. What I felt was missing from the debate generally is that there are currently very different standards for men and women in the military. And I'll speak particularly to the Army because I'm really not sure what the other branches are, but I'd assume that they're similar. But for instance, to characterize a person's strength, there's a physical fitness test, and it involves three different activities. You do 2 minutes of push-ups, 2 minutes of sit-ups, and a two-mile run. And you're scored on a 0 to 100 on how well you do on each of those. And so the minimum is 60%. And so, for instance, a woman for push-ups, she only has to do 19 push-ups in 2 minutes.
And a man has to do?
He has to do 42, which is actually, ironically, the 100% mark for women. So for a man to just pass, it's actually the maximum number of push-ups that a woman would need to do.
Well, I heard Captain Bedell say, let's have the same standard. Is that feasible?
I think that would be the way to go. I would like to see that happen. If women were held to the same physical fitness standards, then really there would never be an argument about strength.
Is that feasible, do you think?
I think it is. I think it is. Certainly, there are men who can't pass the standards, and there are going to be women who can't. Perhaps in the end, it would be more men in the infantry than women, but women should still have an opportunity to do that, to show that they're strong enough. And even when I was in the service, there were women that I served with who were strong enough to pass the test. Although, since the expectations were so low, generally the PT, the morning PTs in the unit that was mixed was...
PT is physical,
oh, I'm sorry.
Physical training.
Physical training, yeah. So every morning you wake up pre-dawn and you go out and put sweats on and you exercise. And in the infantry, that was an intense experience. It was, you'd be smoked afterward. And it was enough to really do well on the physical training tests, just on that account. But for instance, the units that had women in them as well, the expectations were so low that after you're done in the day, you'd have to go work out in order to do well on your PT.
Well, I mean, you quoted, or you sent an article from the Army Times, and they quoted a Sergeant Shannon Osterholm, a female guard truck driver, said she agreed that many women could not or would not want to pass tests to join an infantry unit, but hopes women will be allowed to try. It seems that's where the agreement is.
I think so. I actually found that article after I heard the piece on Friday and was really comforted to see that that the military is putting people into this position where they can test out having women in the same roles or at least in the same combat zones. And the results of those are that the women are agreeing that they do need to pass the same standards.
The other argument that's made by the military, some aspects of the military as well, how could you integrate women into combat roles when they're out in the field for months at a time? And there are different rules, apparently, about... Yes. Hygiene and about other aspects thereof for women and men. So you'd have to also make those rules equal.
Yes, you know, that's something I've never heard people mention in this argument. And for me, that was the most frustrating as a soldier, as a sergeant, that we would go out in the field in the infantry for up to 30 days at a time. And I can remember one out in Yakima Firing Center where we were out there for 30 days and 20 days in, they brought us to a water truck and we got to strip down and wash. And that was the only bath or shower that we got the whole 30 days. Whereas, and now granted, that's on the long end. 15 days might be a more typical field exercise, but with no shower. And in combat roles, there's no telling how long you would go without showers. It certainly could be weeks if you're on a forward operating position. But when you have women in a unit, those women are required to have access to a shower every 3 days. So when I was in the unit that had a co-ed unit, the field exercises were either constrained to 3 days along, which is really hardly enough to get yourself acclimated to it, or they would go 6 days and all the women would go get showers halfway through.
So again, this is a question of making the standards the same.
Exactly.
Though I don't see why it would hurt to not try to get everybody showers a little earlier.
Well, it's sometimes inconvenient, though. I think that Army Times article really summed up the point quite well in that these guys were out on this infantry unit, was out on this forward base, and there was no plumbing, and they couldn't shower for weeks on end. Yet sometimes they had to have convoys specifically to take these two gals back to a place where they could get a shower, exposing them and the rest of the people in the convoy to IEDs.
And again, that Army Times article quoted the women saying that they thought that was kind of ridiculous.
Yeah. I think most people think it's ridiculous. And I was talking with my wife about it, and she was kind of insulted. We go backpacking for longer than 3 days. And it's uncomfortable. But if you understand that you're not going to get a shower, it's just fine.
Equal weight in the packs?
Well, not quite.
But not quite?
Well,
really? Because when I go backpacking, equal weight.
She has to carry her own stuff, and you know she has a fluffier sleeping bag, and that weighs more. So she carries a bit.
Besides which, my wife is stronger than me. I mean, when you look at all these arguments from the perspective of somebody who served, isn't it inevitable that in this country today, we should just come to a point where standards are equal and we ask everyone to compete at the same level?
Absolutely.
And the expectation is that there are strong women and tall women and tough women, just as there are weaker, skinnier, shorter men.
Exactly. My concern, though, is that the standards aren't lowered, that field exercises aren't now constrained to 3 days, because we need to have people who can go out and take land and hold it.
What's your expectation about that? Knowing the Army as you know it, what's your expectation? Would they lower the standards for combat soldiers?
Well, it was actually interesting looking back and preparing for this last night. I went to the Army websites and found their scorecard for the current physical training test. And it was comforting to see that now the sit-ups are identical. The number of sit-ups a woman does and a man does are scored equally. Of course, the run and the push-ups are still quite different. But that was comforting. But I did notice that the push-up standards have dropped considerably for men since I was in. Maybe I shouldn't say considerably, but 10% or so.
Of course, there could be other reasons, right?
We have heard
that we're getting weaker recruits.
You know, I suspect that might very well be the case.
Well, we'll see how this plays out. I'm glad you wrote us.
Well, thank you. Thanks for answering.
Jeff Baylor is an engineer, a consultant for the aerospace, automotive, and computer hardware industries. He served in the Army in the late 80s and early 90s. His company is Convergent Mechanical Solutions. And he wrote us an email, and we wanted to talk to him. You could do that, too. Thank you, sir.
Thank you.
It's weekday.
Good morning, it's 9:29. You're tuned to 94.9 KUOW Seattle, news and information. I'm Andy Hurst. We'll take a listen to some of the best music of 2012. That's coming up next.
Support for KUOW comes from the UW Medicine Eye Institute at Harborview Medical Center. The UW Medicine Eye Institute offers complete services from basic eye exams to complex treatments and surgeries. More information is available at uwmedicine.org.
I'm Ira Glass of This American Life, and each week on our program, as you may have heard, we choose a theme. We bring you different stories on that theme. But this week, we are trying something a little different. The theme is things that happened this week. That's right, things that happened in the 7 days leading up to the program, from stories that you might have seen in the news, though we will cover them in a completely different way, to stories so local and personal you will not find them anywhere else this week.
This American Life, Saturday morning at 11 o'clock.
Support for KUOW comes from PacMed. Same day, evening, weekend, and online appointments available through MyChart. Hours of operation and locations are available at pacmed.org or at 1-888-4-PACMED.
We have clouds and rain, 49 degrees in the U District. We're expecting a high of 50 today. Clouds and showers today, tonight, and tomorrow. Tonight's low in the mid-40s, tomorrow's high in the low 50s.
What new musical artists came out in 2012 that you should be listening to? Well, now is the time to find out. It's because bands you can share with your people you're giving gifts to, perhaps. Larry Mizell writes the My Philosophy column in The Stranger, DJ Street Sounds for KEXP. He's a member of several local hip-hop groups, the most active being Don't Talk to the Cops. Good to see you again.
Good to see you.
What time is Street Sounds on?
6 to 9 every Sunday.
Okay, just making sure I had that right.
Just making sure I remembered.
Beth Warshaw is, what's your official title now?
I'm the co-director of programming at the Vera Project.
Co-director of programming. Is that it? Did you get a bump for managing director?
We have co-directors just in general. We're a really interesting model, and we get to work together a lot. It's fun.
So it's less hierarchical.
Yes.
She is co-director of programming at the Vera Project, the all-ages music and art and educational space in Seattle, at Seattle Center. Good to see you again.
Thank you.
And Liz Riley, co-founder and editor of the blog Three Imaginary Girls. Good to see you again.
Good to see you.
All right. Less talk, more music. I shall start with you, sir.
Fair enough.
Tell me about Blue Sky Black Death and Nacho Picasso.
Blue Sky Black Death is a production duo that's been around a while, done a lot of hip-hop outside of Seattle. Wu-Tang affiliates, stuff like that. And in late 2011, they started working with a local MC by the name of Nacho Picasso, great rap name. And then in 2012, they dropped, what, three albums together? No, two, but three altogether. Nacho himself dropped another one with another couple producers. But their latest altogether was an album called Exalted, and it's just great, really kind of cloudy, menacing stuff, very different from a lot of Seattle stuff, but very Seattle. And this is the opening track. It's called Bloody Murder.
How out the county, push up in the brownie, bastard from a basket, mama wish she never found me, wish she would've drowned me. Grew up hella rowdy, Piper then she hound me, now she hella pouty, bitch I'm bowdy bowdy, you shoulda never crowned me, Nacho PBSBD, this must be like round three, since I am the bitch, I'ma write this rhyme on bounty, my head hella cloudy, Robert McCown, Junior, say I, you can come around me, like my belly button, I'm a copper Audi, I be kicking out teeth, I be sticking out beef, two chain smoking, drinking like a alky. I'm a perfect stranger. My dealer look like
the guy's having fun with his language.
For sure. That's one of his defining characteristics, how much fun he sounds like he's not necessarily having while he's spitting his rhymes, but just with the wordplay.
Yeah, the wordplay, yeah.
For sure.
All right, so what makes it menacing and stormy and yet Seattle?
Well, you know, Seattle kind of has a menacing, stormy vibe going on, especially around this time of the year. And a lot of the more popular Seattle hip-hop, like, say, Macklemore, who's huge and has had a huge 2012, is very, like, sunny and posy and earnest. And I think that stuff like what Blue Sky Black Death and Nacho are doing kind of captures the more, I've been in a basement for months, chain smoking, kind of very Seattle, almost Seattle rock kind of, you know, back in the day kind of vibe.
Yeah. Tell me, do you think that this year, which saw all those murders and all the concern about shooting and the relationship between the cops and the community, has affected the music?
Definitely. I would say so. I think there's definitely seeing a kind of resurgence of a dark perspective going on from a lot of artists. Definitely a lot of vocal distrust of the police and the general wariness of life in the streets.
In this town, in this region, huh?
For sure.
Yeah. All right. Beth, what do you got? Do you have just something cloudy and stormy to follow that?
No, I thought we would completely switch topics and go somewhere jangly and happy. I actually picked the Ariel Pink record as one of my surprise favorites of the year.
Who are these guys?
Ariel Pink. Well, the first time I saw him about 9 years ago, he was pushing a very weirdo, no wave kind of vibe and stormed out of the show he was in because he didn't like something and then walked off completely. And now he's kind of come back the past few years with a really accessible, just really, it's earnest and sunny, but it's also really fun. And I was listening to this song and I heard this complete Roger McGuinn, like early Birds jangle. And I was like, what is this? And I completely came from behind to surprise me that I really, really enjoyed this record, which is also very changeable, but at the same time, always very catchy and all variations on a theme. So I wanted to put the single on, which is Only in My Dreams.
No kidding. Am I back in the 70s?
I mean, I chose a lot of things this year that were really... I went a little insular this year and just chose the things that really spoke to me, knowing that everyone else was going to go for a very open political vibe. And so this one just feels really good. It's the musicianship in it is just impeccable and was something I really wanted to make sure that I got to hear more and other people got to hear more as well, because he is a great live performer and he is touring kind of constantly, and this record really just kind of took me by storm.
Where's he based?
I believe he's based out of New York now.
Yeah, Los Angeles, California.
Oh, this never
mind. No, it's his origin. His origin.
Okay.
I was just seeing where he was from originally, because that is a Southern California sort of sound, isn't it?
It's pure AM gold.
And a complete 180 from where he used to be, which is really interesting.
Would you say it was no wave? Is that what you said?
Yeah, he was really atonal and dissonant about 8 or 9 years ago.
Really?
Yeah, just went through this whole complete shift.
Wow. Fell in love?
Mm-hmm.
all right, that's Ariel Pink. And Liz Riley, where do you start us? And the new music of 2012. Good music of 2012.
Yeah, it was really hard to pick this year, as it is every year, actually, out of Seattle bands. But this is a Seattle band called The Pharmacy, and this is actually, they've been around for almost 10 years, which I find hard to believe because I remember the first album, and I can't believe it's 10 years ago. But this is their fourth album, and they are... what I love most about them is that their recorded music just really brings all the aspects that I love about their live show, which is just, you know, an all-encompassing party vibe, scratchy DIY, punky pop sensibility. They're just super fun to see live, and just hearing them recorded, just they record it in a way that they can capture that magic. And this is off the album Stoned and Alone, that was released just a few weeks ago, the early November, and the song I love the most is Dig Your Grave.
Dig your grave.
Yeah. It's kind of a downer lyrically, but the music, it has that whole Smiths, like, you know, happy sounds, sad lyrics to it. So that works for me, especially when it's this rainy outside.
So this... these guys relocated to New Orleans from Vashon Island?
Yeah, they lived in New Orleans for half a year, almost a year, and just lived day job to day job, you know, assignments, and all lived together in one thing. And I think it really brought about this maturity and kind of what's the word? Kind of concentrated their sound, just really made it gel together when they came back and did this album. It's a lot more mature and together, and I think it's a great reflection of what they've been through over the last year.
Wow. And they have also been touring a lot. They toured all through Europe in October, I see.
Yeah, that must have been super fun to be in some European tour van with them.
Yeah, all through Germany. There you go. And Italy. All right, let's go. I'm going to go around one more time, then I'm asking you to reflect in a moment. So what's Kingdom Crumbs, Larry Mizell?
Kingdom Crumbs is, they're kind of a... They're a bit of a supergroup, locally sourced from a collective of hip hop cats that they call themselves Cloud Nice. It includes actually Nacho Picasso, who you heard earlier. They're made up of Tayshaun, Mikey Nice, Jarv D, and Germ, and they've made some really their self-titled album that came out this year. It's really forward looking. It's really, really like spiritual. But very like street level at the same time. It's very dope. It's definitely one of my favorite releases of the year.
Really?
Yes, for sure.
Wow. And Kingdom Crumbs? I mean, and Mezzanine, rather?
Yes. Mezzanine is one of their first singles off the record.
In my money metropolis, hard times got me thinking of taking hostages. Police badges slowly turning to swastikas. Can't tell you how the dope got in the hood, but know where the vodka is. And they got all the moxie. Put me under the jail, they spot me with some oxy. And now that's a rich man drug, and I can't afford to see their own people getting fucked up. Politician making laws that they don't abide by. Having meetings in a strip club while they getting high. Said it's gonna rain, but it's clear skies. They controlling us, man, it's all lies. We going to the mezzanine. We chilling in the mezzanine. Getting high up in the mezzanine. Ha, we in the mezzanine. We going to the mezzanine. We chilling in the mezzanine. Getting high up in the mezzanine. Ha, we in the mezzanine. Yeah. Living wrong, it ain't easy trying to get right. My brothers can't get work, but they can get life. Keep the prisons full so higher ups can sit nice. Then belly full, we some wolves after midnight. Right. Don't get caught up trying to be a G. If you do, don't be Scarface, be Huey P. Be your thing when you do it, don't just scoop for cheese. All that cheddar don't mean this shit ain't for you and me. And my team are some warriors. No bravado brilliant, the bottom ain't for us.
Don't be Scarface with you, Huey P.
Yeah, true words.
You know, Larry Mizell, in two songs, I will make a judgment that you're going for more of a traditional sound, a traditional rap sound, returning to the roots in some way than the last couple times you brought music in and talked. Is that accurate? I mean, I see that you do have Macklemore on this list too, and you have Shabazz Palaces. So,
yeah, I don't know how much of it we're going to get to on this list, but you know, there's so many different sounds coming out of here this year. I think those two last examples are fairly non-traditional, but you know, Kingdom Crumbs definitely evokes stuff that's been around and has been very foundational, like Outkast for one.
Why non-traditional? Where's the
it doesn't sound like what's on the radio in the clubs. You're not hearing like a kind of a throwback 90s breakbeat sample heavy kind of thing either. It's very airy and spacey, synth based. You know what I mean?
Yes, I do. Yeah.
So
some of the backing vocals slowed down, sped up. Messed with a little bit.
For sure. And I mean, that's pretty popular now.
Oh, it is?
It's
among the young people.
Yes, for sure. Those young people. I hear about them all the time.
All right. So, Beth, hello, darling.
Hello, darling. Yeah, we would really not be put back to back on normally. And maybe Liz can help me.
We're breaking the rules.
Yeah. Maybe Liz can help me out with some of the details because I know you also love this record as well. But Ella Darlin is basically, they're British, but the lead singer and songwriter is Australian originally. And their album Europe came out in the spring. And I had never been a huge Twee fan. I'd been kind of off and on loving that. But just really hearing this record, and again, hearing the clarity of it, and hearing, I think Elizabeth, the singer, is a really wonderful describer of a very particular sort of life. And I think that it really appeals to a lot of people who've lived that kind of life. It's very, it's about travel, it's about memories, and about where your memories are kind of placed around the world.
What's Twee again?
Twee, oh.
You guys defined it for me before. What is it?
Jangly, it's like wistful.
Soft and cuddly.
Pretty.
Yeah. Sweet.
Yeah. But that doesn't always pertain to the lyrics either. But she is just really very, kind of gets to the heart of whatever situation she's in. And it's a very, it is feeling jangly again, but very wistful at the same time. I had seen her live. She actually played the Vera Project right before I moved here. And when I saw her and them live, I'd never seen so many librarians dancing so hard.
Well, there you go, right there. If librarians are dancing, it's got to be good. Ella Darlin, this is Capricornia from Europe.
Could you ever understand how you ended up here? Any friend you've ever had has disappeared. And the tug of a heartstring is the line that pulls you home. You bear witness to the ones you used to know. And I keep having these dreams. And I keep having these dreams. And I keep having these dreams.
Capricornia from Ella Darlin from the Europe release. We're getting some of the best music of 2012, chosen by Beth Warsha Duncan. Gave us that one, co-director of programming at the Vera Project, all ages music, art, and educational space in Seattle. Larry Mizell, who's most active in among several local hip-hop groups, Don't Talk to the Cops. He is also the writer of the My Philosophy column in The Stranger, and DJ Street Sounds for KEXP, 6 to 9 p.m. on Sunday nights. And Liz Riley, co-founder and editor of the blog Three Imaginary Girls, Orca Team.
Yeah, actually, I was going to play the Pinellas.
Oh, you do what you want.
Yeah. No, just because...
oh, I see. When I see my arrow.
Yeah, the arrow.
Yes, the Pinellas.
I'll talk about the Orca Team.
No, no, do the Pinellas. We don't want to confuse people.
I love the fact that they're named after Lou Piniella, the Seattle Mariners manager. So they obviously wear their Seattle-ness on their sleeve. They also wear their love of the Ramones on their sleeve. Their slogan is "All Ramones, all the time." So I just love the fact that they're combining the Seattle aesthetic with this New York Ramones sound, and they make these just really catchy pop songs that have this punk tone to them.
So this song is I Think of You, and it's from Without a Fight.
Exactly.
Every night, if this is stuck inside my head.
That's the Pinellas. I think of you from their Without a Fight album. Fair enough. Liz Riley offering that up as co-founder and editor of the blog Three Imaginary Girls. Best music of 2012 from Larry Mizell, Liz Riley, Beth Warshaw Duncan. So I'm going to get three more songs in. But so generally, how did this year feel? How did this year feel in music to you, Liz Riley?
Well, I feel like there's a definite evolution from the concentrated like beard rock that was you know, kind of making it big. And now people are kind of getting back to their roots. Like with the Orca Team, if we can play that before we leave, that's, you know, going back to 1960s kind of Aerial Pink vibe of, you know, just inspired pop, lo-fi, jangly guitar. And then with the Pinellas going with the Ramones roots and, you know, the Pharmacy even has a little bit of a DIY like beach dance party to it. So it's been a year of evolution. And next year, I'm super excited because most of my favorite bands are releasing albums. So I kind of already have my top 10 list. If we want to record that soon, I can do that because I already know my favorites of 2013.
Will Beard Rock return? Beard Rock. What was Beard Rock?
Beard Rock
again?
Will never die.
Yeah, I don't think it will ever die. I think it'll just grow longer.
Born Kim.
There'll be more, yeah, more wispy beards. What did you think about this year?
I mean, to me, it feels like people have stopped feeling like they're going to guaranteed make money off their music, which is a pro and a con, and a pro musically, because I think that lets people just really go weird.
I mean, they're not trying to second guess what the audience will buy.
Yeah, they're just basically feeling freed up to know that this is something they do because they love it and because they're not trying to please anybody sometimes but themselves. And that can yield some really wonderful lyrics. It can yield some really, really far out kind of music. And I personally love really weird stuff sometimes. Not gauging like what I just played y'all, but sometimes I really love some really strange out there stuff. And you'll hear when I play a little Damien Jurado if we get time for that. People are just getting a little weirder and I love it.
And overall, we touched on this a little bit, Larry Mizell, but what do you feel is happening in the music this past year?
You know, I feel like people are getting weirder. I feel like there's a, at least in hip hop and R&B nationally and locally, I would say this year has been kind of a time of consciousness expanding a little bit. You have people, big part of the scene, like R&B singers like Frank Ocean is coming out saying that he's not heterosexual. He doesn't really define, you know, what he is. You have artists like The Satisfaction, also for that matter. These the in you know, that kind of alpha male heteronormativity and everything that's been in like urban music culture and grand for so long, that kind of getting broken down, that's pretty revolutionary, I think. Never really saw that in 2012 big time. You're definitely seeing a lot of kind of blown out, cloudy kind of sounds, like the How to Dress Well record. Really, really, really awesome.
Who did that? Is that, that
that's the name. The band? It's a producer and singer. He had an album called Total Loss. It's fantastic. I was a big fan of the Fiona Apple record. That's probably my second favorite album of the year. I'm not sure how that relates to everything. She's just kind of doing her own thing at all times. Yeah, just lots of new sounds, new vibes, and different ways of thinking, and I think that people are ready for it.
All right, so let's go around one more time pretty quick. So OC Notes.
OC Notes, local producer, MC, singer, genius. He's kind of part of the family tree of Shabazz Palaces and The Satisfaction. He did a couple dates with them during their recent European tour. His latest album is called Pre-Future Postmodern Love Songs, a.k.a. Alien Booty Bass. It's pretty great. This song is called Hard Ass Jazz.
Pick up. ghosts of the words in a song. Nothing to have when all that you want is gone.
So we did a little cross statement. So this is Damien Jurado.
Mm-hmm. That was most avant-garde kind of station in town for a moment there.
That's
it was
right.
Kind of amazing.
I went from OC Notes to Damien Jurado. That's good. That's just what we should know. And we'll compare and contrast. So Damien Jurado.
Damien Jurado has been around a long time, kicking around the Northwest. He has been around maybe since 1997, which is when I first picked up his first record. And he has done the folky, you know, beard, sometimes no beard, with a guitar for a really long time. But this, I think, as much is kind of the partnership with producer Richard Swift that he had in his last record, too. And he's really, again, getting weirder, more expansive. This song is actually like a little over 6 minutes. A lot of just really interesting stretch out kind of music that I hadn't heard from him before. Fewer lyrics and more musicality to it, and it's really impressive to me.
Nothing is the News is the name of the track, and
Maricopa is how I had been saying it, and no one has corrected me.
That's fair enough. How do you like that compared to OC Notes?
Well, I'd love to hear OC Notes remix of Damien Jurado. Damien's definitely the dean of beard rock, but he's always been like a cut above because he's such a OG and an original.
Mm-hmm.
He keeps
I think
it
there's
trim.
Definitely yes, for sure. Real even.
All right, we'll end on Orca Team.
Yeah, Orca Team is a Seattle band, and they blend the 1960s like inspired pop beach party that I feel like would be great on an Ariel Pink bill. And they actually opened up for Hello Darling when they were at the Vera Project, so it kind of all fits together in a nice mixtape. The song that I chose, it's like a 1960s prom song to me, which I guess it says something about proms for me in that it says the song is "I've Been Crying All Day."
That's great. All right. Orca Team. That's from Liz Riley. She's co-founder and editor of the blog Three Imaginary Girls. Larry Mizell is here, member of the band Don't Talk to the Cops, also Street Sounds, KEXP, and The Stranger, My Philosophy. And Beth Warshaw Duncan, co-director of programming at the Vera Project. We'll go out with the Orca Team. I appreciate you guys coming in.
Thanks so much for having us.
Helping us just get a taste of the best music of 2012. We'll put up all their choices on our webpage, on our Facebook page, weekday on KUOW.
Crying all day. It seems like such a waste. Because no amount of tears will ever take your place. When you come here,
and now, the sound of the day.
Well, a lot of you are familiar with that sound. 2.5-month-old baby exploring the world. Weekday listener Jacob sent that in saying he's a stay-at-home dad who's very lucky to get to hear this sound every day. Indeed he is. What interesting sounds are you hearing? Record 30 seconds. Send it to us, along with the story behind it. Weekday at KUOW.org. Put Sound of the Day in the subject line. Speaking of great things, along with babies, books from Nancy Pearl, that's part of what's coming up next hour. Stay with us.
Headlines from NPR News are coming up next. Good morning.
Thanks for listening. The program you just heard was made possible by the financial support of our listeners. Support this program and others like it by making a pledge today at KUOW.org.